Hey everyone, and welcome to episode 76 of Hooked on Score, Confessions of a Film Music Addict. I'm Benjamin Moy, and I'm here with Rick Urban. Hey, Rick.
What's going on, Ben?
Oh, you know, just stuff.
Just stuff.
Yeah, stuff.
What kind of stuff?
Oh, you know, work, life.
Yep, that's about it. Those are the two main things.
Yeah.
Work and life. Work, life, movies, and music.
True.
You've been hitting the theaters yet? Do you have theaters open out there?
Very few. And I think they're actually closed again. So,
I'm itching. I want to see Tenet.
If you know anything about it, don't tell me. I see it.
It's what?
I said you want to see Tenet and then die soon afterwards. I get it.
So my theory is usually when I go to movies during the day, there's nobody in a theater anyways. So if because of the pandemic, I'm sure people aren't going to the movies as frequent anyways. So the theater should be really empty during the day, right? So I figure if I go to see it maybe during a Tuesday afternoon, that might work.
Maybe that'll work. I don't know.
If nothing else, I can report on the score for our listeners, and then if I die, I can say I did it for all of our loyal followers, Ben.
Okay. I guess that works for me.
Yeah, no, it sucks because last night would have been just a great night to go to see a movie, and I was just like, so.
Before we get to our soundtrack spotlights, what have you seen recently? What have you watched recently,
So I've been going through all of the Marvel movies again.
Okay.
Because I saw a bunch of them without paying attention to them, and I think there's a couple that I just missed completely. I missed a lot of the second phase.
Okay. Yeah, it's well worth it.
Including a very, very important one, which I think Age of Ultron, a lot of important stuff happens.
Yeah.
And for some reason I thought I saw that, but I watched it last night and I don't think I really have watched that movie. But yeah, I've been on that. I feel like that might be something that we delve into in the future. I think we kind of, when we first started, we said that we weren't going to do any Marvel. And because it's just been so over, at this point, it's oversaturated, right?
Right.
Yeah.
But I mean, we could find a unique spin on it.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like we'll figure that out and maybe bring some of that, because it is, even though it is so, you know, over the top and everything like that, some of the best music in the last decade was in those movies. I mean, that's when you think about a movie that can show off a composer, comic book
true.
Movie is, you know, that's where it is.
It's the quintessential
fantasy kind of.
Well, what I'm saying, it's the quintessential composer's fantasy, because they can take out all the stops, you know?
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. There's no floor, or, you know, you don't have to worry about being too much ever.
Right.
Somebody's ripping down a building, so don't be too much there. Maybe a little light harpsichord under that. And it's like, no, let's just go all out. Kind of.
I mean, you can do light harpsichord under that. I mean, look at Doctor Strange.
That's true. That's another one. That's up close. It's coming up.
So have fun.
I just made it through phase two, so I'm getting into this. But what have you been watching?
I've been watching TV shows mainly, but as far as movies, let's see. I rewatched Bill and Ted Face the Music again.
Oh, okay.
Which is a lot of fun. And the music's
good
too. One
thing that I noticed about that, there's a big, the promo picture, or Bill and Ted on a stage with a gong behind them. Do you know the picture I'm talking about?
No.
So the majority of the gongs made in the world are the brand Wuhan, and they're made in Wuhan. So I'm guessing they filmed that before everything happened with COVID, and their main promo shot has the word Wuhan written on a gong in the background. So they actually blacked it out. So if you pull up the image for Bill and Ted Face the Music, there's a promo picture where they're both on stage with a gong behind them, and there's a big black mark across where the label on the gong says Wuhan.
That's funny.
So that's, unless maybe they didn't get like the rights to put Zildjian or Sabian, which are the other two gong makers, but, or maybe, I don't know, but I'm thinking they actually blacked out the word Wuhan because of the whole pandemic thing.
I can see that.
Which is kind of, I'd actually wonder what happens to the Wuhan factory. I hope they're still making cymbals because they are one of the main producer of gongs and China cymbals. So, yeah.
Well,
but anyways, how was the music? Who did the music for Bill and Ted Face the Music?
Well, other than the, all the songs, the score itself was Isham.
Nice.
And Mark Isham. And so our friend Allison worked on it as well.
Nice.
That way, in that assistantship
way.
I will say the guy who now runs our graduate program, Kubelay Gunnar, he composed the final track on the soundtrack, which is the first song that Wild Stallions performs in the movie.
Really?
Yeah.
That's cool.
It's very out there and very, very strange. It has bagpipe and theremin and throat singing.
You know, I have a love for bagpipes. Do you like bagpipes?
Yeah, I love bagpipes.
I'm just saying,
you know, it was the weird combination of instruments.
Yeah, no, but I mean, I really love bagpipes. There was a story. You're gonna think I'm crazy, but this happened to me.
You're crazy, right?
When I was in, and I was in college, I used to practice really late at night, like, you know, till 1-2 in the morning. And I just kind of went outside of the school, the music building. This was in Chicago. And the campus is kind of in the middle of downtown. Well, not downtown Chicago, but pretty a pretty urban environment. No pun intended there. And I hear this weird sound. And it's like 1 a.m. And I'm like, what is going on? So I go outside and there's a guy in full dress, full bagpipe outfit, regalia, if you will. And he's just playing bagpipes in the middle of this like empty street. And I'm like, holy cow. So I like run back into the music building and I'm like looking for somebody else. I'm like, come here, you got to see this. And I find like another person practicing. I bring him outside and there's nobody there. And I'm like, he was right there. It was a guy playing bagpipes. And they're like, dude, come on, man. It's late. I gotta get this done and go home. I'm like, no, there was a bagpiper. He was playing bagpipes. So yeah.
Look, Rick, I believe in ghosts and I believe you saw what you saw, but I think a guy was just messing with you.
He saw that
you saw him and just saw you that you ran back into the building to find someone and he just left.
But honestly, if somebody was playing bagpipes in the middle of the street at 1 a.m, wouldn't there be people kind of out of their houses? Like it was on a residential street. Like, wouldn't people come out and be like, hey, what's going on? Like,
maybe it's a tradition of that evening, that night of the year.
So they were expecting bagpipes.
Yeah. A single bagpiper comes out into their neighborhood and plays bagpipes for like 5 minutes.
That could be. But yeah. I've always loved bagpipes and one day I would love to do a score with bagpipes heavily involved, besides just the scene where an ancillary character dies and then they had to have a funeral for him in like, you know, the middle of the first act kind of thing.
Or the end of a sci-fi film.
Yes, indeed. We already talked about that horrendous
and that relates to other stuff. Mm. But anyway, so yeah, I've been watching more Pirates of the Caribbean again, rewatching. Pirates of the Caribbean, you know, one of the first movies that actually made me want to become a film composer and get into film music somehow.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean,
you know, I was actually looking through a box of old stuff this past week, and I found this paper that I'd written in high school that was like describing that experience of seeing Pirates of the Caribbean for the first time and getting blown away by the music.
Yeah. I mean, it's like one day we'll figure out who actually wrote it. And like, yeah. I think that's
when back Hans, then I was naive. I was like, this Klaus Badelt guy, man, he's great.
When Hans Zimmer like dies, I hope in his will, he tells us like the truth about who wrote Pirates of the Caribbean, because I don't know. And I've seen so many different names attached to that score. Well, just him and Klaus, but it's funny, in different renditions, even of the like the printed score that I play with orchestra sometimes, like we play like the highlights. Sometimes it says Klaus in the top, sometimes it says Hans. It's it's a trippy little thing, but the music is amazing. So
yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Anyway, actually,
it's funny you mentioned that, because I wanted to mention the other thing I've been doing besides going through the Marvel is I've been catching up on war movies I have never seen.
Okay.
And obviously the big one for Pirates of the Caribbean is Black Hawk Down, because the main theme for Black Hawk Down is the what's it called? The pirates theme, the dun 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 dun. That's the main theme of Black Hawk Down for the helicopters.
I'm sure there's a slight variation, but yeah.
It's just different instrumentation, but the notes, the music's the same. It's just with kind of electronic guitars and synth sounds.
Well, again,
and it's Hans.
Pirates could have been a ripoff of that.
Yeah. Well, actually, I mean,
because Pirates is a ripoff of that. It's a ripoff of Gladiator, you know, all this other Hans stuff. And then,
yeah, you know, what's crazy though? I don't, where is it? I think Black Hawk Down was 2001. When was the first Pirates?
Well, they were working together at the time.
Who was?
Klaus and Hans, and Klaus? I believe.
So for our listeners that don't know, the first Pirates of the Caribbean, Curse of the Black Pearl, who has actual credit on it? Is it Klaus Badelt?
Klaus Badelt has actual credit on the soundtrack.
Okay.
And the movie.
Okay. But was there an actual lawsuit over it?
I don't think so, because there's nothing official.
Gotcha. So some people think that Hans Zimmer wrote the music. Some people think Klaus Badelt wrote the music.
I'd say Klaus like blatantly ripped off the music.
But he was working for Hans, right?
I know. Well, either for Hans or at least in the same area.
Well, so the thing is nobody knows. We all are,
We all speculate. We all speculate.
Yeah, everybody speculates about this, but it has a lot of similarities to Hans Zimmer's music before. It looks like Black Hawk Down came 2 years before Pirates of the Caribbean. The music for Black Hawk Down is pretty amazing. And also, I figured out where all the actors were, at least all the male actors in 2001, they were all in Black Hawk Down. It's basically every actor, every male actor is in this movie. It's even little like Tom Hardy is just like this little minor character. And it's if you want to get into war movies, I highly recommend it, because it's still modern enough, because there's so many war movies about World War II and Vietnam that it's just like, man, I can't take another bout of that. So, but yeah, Black Hawk Down was the other one I saw.
Well, why don't we move on to Soundtrack Spotlight?
Indeed. You want to go first?
Sure, I'll go first. Sure, I'll go first. I'm going to Soundtrack Spotlight the new Star Trek television shows on CBS All Access by Jeff Russo, who I've had the pleasure of meeting once. I interviewed for a position with him that I didn't get. But he was a nice guy, is a nice guy. And, you know, this was before he blew up with Fargo and all the other stuff. And then he's been doing these Star Trek shows, Discovery and Picard, at least. And
did you know he was in the band Tonic?
Yes.
Do you know that?
Yes.
He came and did a guest lecture once, and he started talking about that, and he was like, yeah, when I was in Tonic, I was like, you were in the band Tonic? Like, for someone, I grew up in the 90s. That's a big part of my life was the band Tonic. I mean, but sorry, go on. So anyway,
Star Trek Discovery and Star Trek Picard. And I don't know if he's doing any more. He probably is. But Star Trek Discovery, you know.
It says Legion and Counterpart, are those both Star Treks?
No, those are different shows.
Okay.
Legion was the great FX series with by the guy who did Fargo and everything. That was X-Men character.
So I'm ashamed to admit I haven't jumped on the TV show Fargo's bandwagon. I really want to, but there's just no time.
The first season's amazing. Well, all the seasons are amazing, but I really love the first season. Each season is its own standalone thing. Hmm. Anyway, I'll sort of like describe both scores. Like Discovery.
Discovery,
Star Trek Discovery. But both scores are very effective and well done. I will say the Discovery main theme leaves a bit to be desired. As far as Star Trek Legacy goes, however, the Picard theme successfully added some new life to the franchise's music, and the scoring is fantastic. And of course, they have the references and, you know, thematic references, that is, and things like that. But
so, when in time is Star Trek Discovery?
Star Trek Discovery takes place 10 years before the original series.
Okay, cool. And then Picard?
Well, that's a loaded statement, actually.
But it's before the first one.
The first two seasons are before the first one, yeah.
Okay. Now Picard is out, and I've been waiting for Picard, and
yeah, Picard has been out for a while, dude.
Jump on Picard.
The first season's been out for a while, and it's very good. I loved it.
An origin story?
No, it is a continuation with Patrick Stewart.
Oh, cool. Okay. I'm in. Boom.
But he's like 94 in it, you know, or something like that, like really old. But anyway, they're still doing
still
a second
a badass
season
and a sexual beast.
Yeah, exactly.
So how's the music for Picard?
I like it better than Discovery just because it's more intimate, because it's more, I would say, because it's more of a sole character driven series rather than Discovery, which is a multi-character driven series.
Okay.
Even though there is a main character
So Picard is obviously about Picard, I'm guessing?
Oh, yeah. Okay. I mean, there's still like ancillary characters, ancillary co-stars, that kind of thing. But it's definitely a Patrick Stewart vehicle.
Nice.
Yeah.
And are there when he quotes, is he quoting the movie or the TV show or both?
Mainly the TV shows. Okay. If I remember, I don't think he quotes any movies. However, it's not just the original series for the Next Generation that he quotes. Because I don't know if you know this, Seven of Nine is in Picard, who is a character from Star Trek Voyager. Yes, her name is Seven of Nine. She's a former Borg drone.
Okay.
Liberated from the Borg. Anyway, but when...
Who plays her?
Jeri Ryan.
Okay, yeah, I know Jeri Ryan. Okay, yeah, I'm in. Yeah.
Who isn't? Anyway, but they actually quote some Voyager theme in the score as well when she's around.
Oh, wow.
It's actually pretty sweet.
Very cool. Yeah, man, I feel like...
Which, by the way, the Voyager theme, Jerry Goldsmith.
You know what? I think you're going to have to give me our certain episodes.
Probably.
Or certain series or seasons.
Or you could just watch everything.
I mean, there's no way I could watch
everything. Rick.
There's too much, man. There's way too much.
All right. There's a website that I use called the Star Trek Chronology Project.
Ooh.
Which lists all the episodes in chronological order, including the movies. Of all the series and all the movies and everything. And it's not in chronological order of release. It's in chronological order of the universe.
Okay.
But yeah. I recommend that as a starting point. Cause nice. It would start with Enterprise, I guess, but which is the prequel series.
Okay.
In the aughts. But then, it goes into Discovery and then the original series. And then all the other stuff.
Wow. Yeah, if you haven't caught on yet, we are definitely talking about some Star Trek this episode. We're getting into this.
We're getting into the
thick of this. And Ben is an expert. We should tell everybody. Ben is kind of an expert on Star Trek, and I am just a newbie that is entering this world. And Ben is kind of like guiding me through this journey. He's holding my hand into the great beyond, if you will, and showing me about all these movies. And because what you told me about when we did that first episode about the first six Star Trek movies, when you told me to watch the Khan TV show episode, Space Seed. That was really cool. Like, I enjoyed that. So anything you can do to help me out with little bits of information like that, going forward, it's good stuff. And I'm sure the listeners would enjoy that too.
Very well.
Mm-hmm.
I am now unhinged.
So I want to talk about my score, my soundtrack spotlight.
Go ahead.
If you will.
Go ahead.
I don't think we've talked about Mr. Desplat, or some people call it Desplat. Do you know do you know the actual?
I think the it's actual Desplat, pronunciation. But I could be wrong.
Desplat. I feel like I heard him say it once, and I think I was saying it a little wrong. But Alexander Desplat scores Ides of March.
The Ryan Gosling movie with George Clooney.
It is indeed. You've seen this?
No.
No? Oh, my God. Okay. Well, when you get election fatigue, turn over and watch this movie in the next couple of weeks, because it's a good movie. One of my favorite scores by Alexander Desplat, who is a big boy that we don't really talk about nearly as much as a giant of the film scoring world.
That's
like,
true.
I think he is recognized as one, but we don't nearly talk about it as much.
He's very much recruited for dramas.
Yes.
Though not all the time. Just he's known for that, at least initially.
But the stuff he does with Wes Anderson... Mm-hmm. is sort of the, you know, the Wes Anderson type of music, but he's kind of approaching it more as a comedy.
Are you saying the music in Wes Anderson movies is Wes Anderson-y?
It is. I mean, so what, so Grand Budapest, right, is a lot of percussion and kind of jazzy stuff from what I remember. And he definitely won the Oscar for that. What other, does he have other Oscars?
I don't remember. I honestly.
Yes, he does. Shape of Water, of course.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. And that was, you know, this sort of whimsical. I mean, it's funny. The word I use to describe it is French. He writes French music, but just to the best of, you know, he's like Debussy. Like if it, he grew up into a film composer kind of thing.
A while ago, like in 2009, I was interning for a recording studio, and the guy there, one of the guys there, loved the score to Benjamin Button, which he did.
Mm.
And he was convinced that it was mic'd entirely by ribbon mics, just by listening to it. Because it's so, you know, warm and dark and sounding, you know?
Hey,
but
man,
I'm honestly like, I don't know, but I suppose that's possible.
Why not? I mean, if you can, I don't know, you'll probably blow out some of them. So yeah. for our listeners that don't know, there are three different types of mics. One of them is a ribbon mic, and it's kind of a very delicate mic.
Yes.
You could, if you put it on like a trombone or something, you might blow it up.
I have one right here. It's a piece of crap.
Ooh, look at that.
No.
Wow.
Don't look at that. It doesn't want your
But yeah, Alexandre Desplat, I think, should be more regarded as kind of the biggest name out there right now. He has, for Eyes of March, he does a couple of things. It's kind of a show. I mean, he could almost use this as a demo reel. He goes through all the different things that he can do. He has a main theme that's pretty present in the track called The Candidate. There's so many different versions of this main theme, which is why it makes it a great main theme. He does, you know, just piano. He does it with just strings. He does it with kind of a rock marching band, kind of like the Candidate on the Trail kind of snare drum, but with like this sort of, I don't know, it sounds like a rock theme. But he actually first presents it in a different version than the principal version, if that makes sense. So a lot of times composers will write a theme and then twist it to the different scenes, mm-hmm. and the different settings of that theme. And I think it's really cool when a theme is presented not in its original form. You know what I mean? When it is, it's very clearly mostly in a major key, for instance, and he sets it first in a minor key or things like that. I really enjoy.
You know what that's called, Rick?
What is that called, Ben?
A variation.
Yes, it's called a variation of the theme. But when it's first presented, it's such a strong moment in a film. You know, when you first hear that theme, that's kind of what you lock onto. So I'm very impressed when they're able to present it in the variation and not have it be distorted into, you know, some people would think that the variation is the main version of the theme. But in this, it's clearly not, because he does the main theme so many different times. He does the Desplat bass, that sort of synthy bass that was all over either Syriana or Babel or Munich. I get those three mixed up, like we've talked about
Munich
before.
Munich was definitely John Williams.
Oh, I think it was Syriana.
Okay, that sounds right.
But he's got this sort of badass bass. I think it was in Zero Dark 30 too, that he uses. He's got probably the best taps trumpet chorale I've ever heard in a track called Behind the Flag. He's got all this jazz stuff. And he's got this delicate, the track Molly is kind of this classic, delicate Desplat string. I think it's a perfect demo for Alexandre Desplat. You can just put it in your car and just listen to every track and not have to skip over any or anything like that. Like you have to do sometimes with film scores where there's, you know, 14 minutes of background under dialogue music. This is, yeah, it's a great score. Ides of March. you know what? It's funny. I hate doing this, but I don't think this is really easy to find on the old like Spotify or things like that. You might actually have to like buy this. What a novel concept, buying a CD, because I actually have the CD of this that I'm holding up right there.
Yeah, I see that.
But yeah, you might have to look it up on YouTube or something like that, because I don't think it's on Spotify last time I checked. So.
Oh, speaking of buying CDs, I bought the new I've ordered the newly released limited edition 2-disc How to Train Your Dragon soundtrack, as well as the Omni Music Publishing
score
of How to Train Your Dragon that was just released as well. So that should be fun. Anyway.
Yeah.
So why don't we get into our main topic?
Let's do it.
All right. Bum, 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 bum. Anyway, I'm going to call this episode Star Trek Film Scores, The Next Generation.
Ooh. So this is a sequel to the episode we did a couple months ago.
Maybe I should call it Star Trek Film Scores 2, The Next Generation.
Yeah, we want to let people know.
Yeah, let people know there's a first one, yeah.
That they want to listen to the first one before this one. Because right, if not, they're not going to know what's going on.
All right, so we start with Star Trek 7
Generations. So I want to make sure I have these in the right order.
Yeah,
order.
Okay.
It's Generations.
Uh-huh.
First Contact.
Yep.
Nemesis.
No.
Insurrection.
Yes.
And then Nemesis.
Yes.
Or Nemesis. Nemesis. Uh-oh. Okay, cool. All right. All right, that's the order. That's the order we're going with. That's the order they released in, right?
Yeah.
What? All right, back to you. Go ahead. All right,
let's start with Star Trek Generations. So we got this score composed by one of the main composers for the 90s Star Trek shows, Dennis McCarthy.
What I've heard has the composer that has written the most music for the Star Trek franchise ever.
I would not be surprised if that is the case.
Yes. That's what Google.
To be honest, I think he has a really unique style. I don't know if it's a good style, but it's a really unique style. And it's something that I admire because it takes a slight meditative approach with a sort of a free-flowing, like you can't even like sort of decipher what the time signature is type of thing. You know? Most of the time, unless it's like an action thing, in which case there's bum bum. Bum, 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 you know, stuff like that. But like, if it's just, you know, an opening transition shot with music behind it, the music, I'm like, does this even have a time signature?
It's sort of open free meter.
Yeah, sort of like that.
Yeah. So did you say he did the music for the which TV shows did he do?
I know he did Deep Space Nine and Voyager. I don't know if I don't believe he did all of either of those, but most of them. And if I'm correct, I believe he did work on Next Generation as well.
Yeah, I think so. When I was surprised, to tell you the truth, as I said, I'm just getting into Star Trek when we first started these episodes. I was very surprised once I got on this guy's IMDb how much he had done. Because going into this movie, I was kind of listening to music. And I was like, okay, this is something a little different. This isn't Goldsmith. This is this guy. And then I started looking up his IMDb. It looks like he has done, going back to, he did 88 episodes in The Next Generation.
There you go.
He did a lot of, what was the other one? He did Stargate SG-1, my friend.
Woo-hoo. Oh, well, that makes sense, I guess.
Deep Space Nine, he did 77 episodes. Mm-hmm. And Star Trek Voyager, 65 episodes. Uh-huh. Star Trek Enterprise, 30 episodes.
I wasn't aware that he did Enterprise, but that makes sense.
Yeah. One thing I like about this guy is he goes back. I love it when you look at composers and they, you know, they're on TV shows and Gunshy is a TV series he did in 1983.
Wow.
What else did he do? Enos. I don't know how to pronounce this. From 1980. Like, done these TV shows that, you know, I didn't even know existed, and they did, right, like 30 episodes of it.
Yeah.
But sorry, I interrupted. Go into it.
But yeah, he's a prolific Star Trek composer. Mm-hmm. If I'm comparing this score to the other scores that we're covering today, I'd say maybe on, like, tied for third place with something. But I would definitely say it's well done. And if I'm comparing it with those other scores, I would have liked a fuller sound, maybe on par with the Goldsmith scores. I think there could have been better orchestration, including, like, doubling and, you know, things like that, you know, because there's a lot of instrumentation in this. If you listen to it, that it's either one instrument or one section doing a line over another instrument or section doing a line, not like many doubles.
When you listen to this movie score for Generations, does it sound like TV music to you?
Yes and no. I mean, I was very well aware of the music from the shows, and so it was like, okay, yeah, compositionally it sounds like TV music, but and orchestrationally, to be honest, but production-wise, I would say it was movie quality.
Yeah, absolutely. No, but I do mean it. And sometimes in TV music, especially back then, they would have different budget limitations. You know, you hear about all these, is it Bruce Broughton, that he was on a TV show and he had a certain amount that he could use for each episode. So he would use like a different section of the orchestra each episode just to like change it up and like have him practice. So a lot of times the instrumentation for TV shows, it's a little bit particular, mostly due to budget restraints.
Are you saying this was because of a budget restraint for the movie?
No. I think that maybe he, like, his style, that sort of ingrained itself into his style.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah. I can see that.
Like the particular way of just using, you know, like you were saying, I think he gives more space than other, no pun intended with their being in space. He gives more time. There's certain, like, there was the big fight scene between Malcolm McDonald and Picard.
Malcolm McDowell.
Sorry, I confused McDonald's. McDowell's.
You must be hungry.
You got the Big Mac? I got the Big Mac.
You got the Golden Arches? I got the Golden Arcs. Yeah.
The main fight scene, there's no music in it. And I'm kind of thinking to myself, if this was, you know, Giacchino or Goldsmith, they'd probably be bashing away during this fight scene.
Probably true.
And then when a main character goes away, the theme is kind of delayed for a little bit there. So I think he gives more space than a lot of the other composers on these movies.
Well, do you have any other thoughts on Generations, Rick?
No, I think it's kind of...
How'd you like the movie itself?
I liked it a lot, actually, but I'm sort of... I was, you know, at this point, taking the journey of somebody just entering this world.
Right.
So I think this is a movie...
So you were
probably
like, why is Whoopi Goldberg here?
Exactly. Yeah. I think it's kind of a fan. Is this a fan favorite movie or no?
I'd say more so than not, but you know,
I think of all the movies,
not the best.
This is one that you can't just watch this one by itself. I think this the worst standalone movie.
Uh-huh. I can
you
see
have
that.
To have some background going into this movie. But it's a nice way to connect the old to the new, and I think that's what they were trying to do. And I kind of eat some of that stuff up a little bit. But yeah, apparently he Shatner rode all of his actual horses in this, I think, because he's
I believe that's true. Yeah, he's
a big horseman.
He's an equestrian, just like your wife, Rick.
Yes. Yeah. Well, that's where I learned about that. So. Yeah, but all right. Yeah, that's all I got to say about this one. Dennis McCarthy, Star Trek Generations.
All right.
And now we move into...
my favorite on this list,
by far.
It's
a lot of people's favorite.
It's a lot of people's favorites, yeah.
Yeah.
In not just the movie, but the score, you know, both together and separate. Mm-hmm. Jerry Goldsmith's First Contact. Mm. So, in my opinion... this is actually the greatest Star Trek score ever.
Yeah.
As far as film.
Yeah.
Including the motion picture, mm-hmm. mainly because Goldsmith takes his original themes from that and expands on them, including the main Star Trek theme and even the Klingon motif with Worf.
Yes. Yeah.
And this score enhances the movie itself like nobody's business. And created it actually had a new feel to it that we hadn't really had in a Star Trek movie before.
Mm-hmm.
An interesting anecdote is that, you know, how Jerry Goldsmith scored Air Force One, that I believe it was that same year or the year after. Anyway, in Air Force, when we were in production on Air Force One, they had Randy Newman as the composer. And first of all, I'm like, why is Randy Newman composing this movie? But anyway,
wait a minute. Goldsmith replaced Randy Newman on Air Force One?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I probably knew that.
So Goldsmith was working on or had just finished First Contact, and he had like 2 weeks at most to get the score for Air Force One done.
Oh, wow.
And so he just took the First Contact score and revamped it, made the melody different, but kept like the orchestration, added some more snare drum, and boom, there you go. There's Air Force One. And
I'm glad you mentioned that, because while I was watching this movie, I kind of did that math in my head.
Oh yeah.
This sounds a lot like Air Force One. And then I started going through and I'm like, they're very close in time. So you just validated a lot of the thoughts that I had about this movie. So thank you for
Yeah. You're welcome. No, First Contact is the OG of those two. But yeah.
Yeah, he kind of takes the all the great music he did for the previous films, he puts it all together and he turns it up a little bit, right? He kind of perfects it, I think. That theme, I think it's originally taken from Star Trek V. The theme, it's almost too perfect, right? Like, if you're going to write a theme, if I wrote this theme, I would kind of stop and be like, okay, this has to be from something because it works too well.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, it's so classic. So I was wrong. I'm glad you brought up the Klingon theme. I was wrong. In the previous episode, I think that the Klingon theme was too kind of tongue-in-cheeky and it not menacing enough.
Mm-hmm.
But no, it's a classic. It's I was completely wrong about it. It works.
Especially when he references it in this, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's such a... I still don't know if you would get away with it today.
I think you might. It's kind of an in joke, so not everyone would get it. So I think
No. I mean, like, if let's say Giacchino created that theme for one of the new Star Trek movies, would it get rejected as too old fashioned sounding, or would it work?
I don't know.
I think it's it.
Well, first when of
I
heard all, Giacchino wouldn't write anything that good, so. Oh, shots fired. Whoa. Shots fired. Jeez. I'm kidding.
Whoa. Hey, buddy. Come on now. You're going to have to eat your words when the new Star Trek scores get discussed. But anyways, the Klingon theme comes back, as you said, in how do you pronounce it? Worf? Is it
Worf? There you go. Worf. Yes.
Okay. I think it's maybe more whimsical in the first movie. I think he kind of made it a little bit stronger.
Well, yeah, because Worf's a hero in this.
Yeah.
Well, he's always been a hero, but...
I believe
there's a hero in all of us.
Anyway. One of my... the march kind of for the Borg is menacing. It's all...
Yeah.
All it can be. It's got some sense in there. Woo.
I just want to point out one moment in the very first sequence when it's the shot of Picard in the alcove, you know, regenerating, and it's pulling out, and it just keeps pulling out, and the music, it's just so good. I'll put a clip in right here.
Does the music pull out with it as well, or what is the...
It crescendos, and there's this great chord change that, like, so good.
So I think we both like this one a lot, and I think a lot of people probably say this is one of his best scores.
Yeah.
Jerry Goldsmith. Obviously, we should tell people Jerry Goldsmith scored this if they don't know.
I think we mentioned it, but yeah.
Yeah, so if you were to, if you think he's going to kind of submit his resume for the next Star Trek film, this would be the one he would submit probably, right?
Would he though?
I think it's one of the best scores in the series. I think we
both. Oh, I agree with that, definitely.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah, there's not much to say about it, unfortunately. It's so good.
It's just so good.
Just watch
it,
listen, enjoy. That's all. That's all it is. That's all you need for that one.
Thank you.
Gotta get me a piece of bacon in me.
Is that cold?
No, I just microwave some bacon. That's what I do. I microwave bacon.
Why do you microwave bacon? That makes no sense.
It's so dirty to make bacon. Like, it's such a process. But I buy this like pre-made stuff and I just pop in the microwave for 30 seconds.
Oh, so it's meant to be microwaved.
Yeah.
I see what you're saying. Okay. Yeah. Anyway. Insurrection.
I'm sorry. I'm chewing bacon.
Hold on. I don't care. Insurrection.
Wait for it. Wait, I got to chew my bacon, man. All right. Insurrection.
Don't say it like that.
Insurrection. So this is the movie cover I think I associate the most with Star Trek.
Weird.
Right? Just kind of growing up in back when they had movie stores, I would always kind of be walking around and I would see this movie like on the cover of the would it have been a VHS or would it have been a DVD?
Possibly. It's
probably a VHS. Yeah, when I was like kind of walking around the old Blockbuster there looking for movies to rent, mm-hmm. I feel like I would walk by this one a lot. Go ahead. Get into it. All right. So this is Jerry Goldsmith again. Surprise, surprise. I think a completely different Jerry Goldsmith than we saw in First Contact. I think it's one of the more quirky of the Star Trek films.
Yes. And so he doesn't have much drama to work with, but
mm-hmm.
I'd say just as this film in general, it feels more like a, old Next Generation episode rather than a big blockbuster movie.
Yeah, absolutely.
Plus they took ideas that were established in the Next Generation show instead of making new ones in order to make this, you know, this story here.
Mm-hmm.
Like the Holo Ship. That is definitely a TV show reference.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm glad you point these out because that's probably was completely lost on me. So at this point, you are, at least I was, pretty comfortable with the new cast. Actually,
most people would be because they watched 7 years of them on television.
No, yeah, but for going into this, for me, I didn't watch any of the TV show. So the first time meeting the new cast was in Generations. And then First Contact, you kind of get there, you get a real movie where they get involved. So now you're kind of really engrossed in these characters. Mm-hmm. So now we can kind of, I don't know, have fun with them a little bit. Cause I think that's what this movie is. This movie kind of is a little bit of a dramedy, if you will. It's got some quirky qualities.
Oh yeah.
A lot of humor that isn't present in more humor than is present in the Picard ones. But again, I haven't seen the TV shows, so I'm just speaking about the movies. It's not quite as humorous as Star Trek 4, which is a whale one. Is that 4?
Yes, that's 4.
Yeah. But it's got some humor in there. The opening cue where they're in the Baku village. Am I saying that right? Baku? Baku. Yeah, that's it. That's how you pronounce it. Baku. It's kind of a different side of Goldsmith that honestly I hadn't really heard a lot of.
Yeah.
It kind of reminds me of, I wrote in my notes here, works but makes me vomit at first, but then I've overwhelmed with the beauty of it. So when it first starts off, I'm like, oh God, one of these. And then you start listening more and you're like, okay, yeah, I'm in. And then you're like, oh man, I can't do that. Oh, that's so Goldsmith. But yeah, it kind of sounds a little bit Forrest Gumpy in a way. That's kind of what I would equate the sound to if I were to try and compare it. But yeah, a little different side of Goldsmith in this one. What do you think?
Yeah, definitely a different side of Goldsmith. It's not. I mean, I would tie this with Generations as my number three here, because
of these four,
yeah.
Gotcha. Okay.
So there is no fourth place. Just 1, 2, 3, 3, and 3.
Oh, okay.
First Contact 1, spoiler alert, Nemesis 2.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, there's not much for me to say about it.
Yeah, it's exactly. I think this one is, it's, I don't know. What is this? Is
maybe
it forgettable?
Not forgettable. It's not memorable. That's what I'm going to say.
Yeah.
Not memorable.
It's more subtle. And it's, no, maybe not more subtle. Maybe just not as memorable. But it works with what the film is. But I think this might be an example of it works for what the film is trying to do, but the film itself doesn't lean to showcase the music. You know what I mean? If you have a five-minute...
Yeah, that's true. It's almost like they didn't want music.
Kinda. It's almost, you know, because if you have 5 minutes of shots going around the ship, that's prime put music here that blows everybody away territory.
Right. But
if you've got this kind of woodland village with this mixed in humor, with this mixed in, this is kind of Data's story, right? This one? This is a pretty Data-centric movie.
I mean, he's taken more of a forefront in the movies, yeah, certainly.
Yeah.
Especially this one and the next one.
Yeah, well, the next one, for sure, yeah. But, yeah, so I think this is kind of Goldsmith. I don't know. I think he really served the movie rather than tried to force in the themes that you're so accustomed to. And I think it was just serving the movie. That's all. Underwhelming, though. If I'm going to listen to a Star Trek score, I'm not going to listen to this one, I think.
And on that note,
move on to the next one.
Let's move on to the final of the Next Generation movies, Nemesis.
You know what I liked most about First Contract. We'd been working without a contract until now. What I liked about First Contact is, for me, that was the first time I was kind of freaked out by a Star Trek bad guy.
The Borg or Borg Queen?
Like all of the Borgs.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, the entire entity of it.
Uh-huh.
Oh, wait a minute. So I have to talk about the horrible makeup in Insurrection, right?
I mean, I don't know if it's horrible. I mean, you got F. Murray Abraham. You can't see his face, but...
It kind of looks like if you were to take a garbage bag and stretch it over his face.
Well, that's what they're doing, basically.
That's the makeup. I mean,
like, except they're doing that with skin in the story, you know.
Yeah. I didn't buy it. I was, once I saw that makeup, I was like, no, I can't do it. I'm not, yeah. But Nemesis, which of course is another
AKA
AKA
the one with Tom Hardy.
AKA the one with Bane. This is the first appearance of Bane.
Yes. In the Star Trek universe.
In the Star Trek world. So this is Jerry Goldsmith again. Tom Hardy plays the bad guy, which Ben probably knows his name. Oh, you just heard my stomach growl. I gotta get more bacon in me.
I get the bad guy. Hang on. Is it?
Uh-oh. I stumped you.
Uh-oh. I got this. I just have to IMDb it. So I don't got this.
Oh, no. Ben, you're letting me down, man.
I think I know what it is, but I'm not going to say it until I know what it is.
You know, we can edit this in post. You can, like...
No, I'm not going to edit. This is gold.
It's like... Right around an hour into the episode where Rick starts eating bacon and Ben doesn't know
Shinzon.
The main character's name.
Shinzon.
What?
Shinzon. So I did not remember that.
Yeah, I didn't know that. Huh. We'll talk about this for a second while I eat my bacon.
Well, while Rick eats his bacon, Tom Hardy's in this movie. With the Star Trek franchise, and,
I'm not doing this for me. Playing, I'm doing this for you guys
because he plays
my stomach starts to growl. Right. If I don't have any bacon in me, then you're going to hear growling in the background of Ben telling you about the movie. Go ahead, tell more about the movie.
I like the score because it actually has synthesizer in it.
Yes, it does. Look at that. That was my first note.
Yeah.
Yeah, he uses exposed synthesizers here. He's trying new things. He's adding bells and whistles to this.
Because it's gotten to the point now where it's like, okay, we've established the orchestral feel of Star Trek. Dramatic, epic.
Yeah.
Let's add some classic sci-fi synth in there. But not classic sci-fi synth, but, you know, sci-fi synth, you know.
Yeah. I mean, it's not a theremin, but it's more modern sounding, I think, if you're going to... I mean, obviously, it's the latest of all the ones that we're talking about today, but it is the most, it's kind of where Jerry Goldsmith sort of moves into a more modern sound, especially for the, I think it's most, it matches the mise-en-scene. Is that how you say that? Mise-en-scene?
Mise-en-scene
of the film.
Just
kind of
say mise-en-scene, okay?
Mise-en-scene. So if you're new to film, mise-en-scene is kind of what is used, a word to describe kind of the whole setting and feel, the tone of the film, right?
Mise-en-scene is...
Mise-en-scene.
Is the layout of whatever can be seen in the frame.
Yeah, the mise en scène. So it matches what you see. Here's a good one. It matches what you see in this film, as a good score should.
There you go.
Yeah. He does a great, great build-up to the first time they meet Tom Hardy.
Yeah, it's memorable.
Yeah, you're like, okay, what's going to happen here? What's going on? This is a big boy bad guy here. This is, sorry, because I've been looking it up, 2002.
Yeah.
I have Air Force One-y on this one as well. Is this one Air Force One-y too?
Not as much, of course, but I would say so. I mean, it's still Goldsmith, you know.
I wonder if I just wrote that as a wrong note. Maybe I was trying to write that under First Contact. But anyway.
Stop saying First Contract.
First Contract.
Anyway,
we're gonna have to edit that out.
So, all right. Speaking of this movie and the music in it,
mm-hmm.
They got Data singing Blue Skies at the beginning. No. This is good, Rick.
Because it does come into play. Yeah, you're right.
It does come into play, mm-hmm. especially with, you know, the B4 or whatever mm-hmm. prototype Data at the end.
Mm-hmm.
And, but that. It comes back into play in Star Trek Picard.
Oh.
That song, as it pertains to Data, comes back into play in Star Trek Picard. Just so you know, a little teaser for you, Rick.
Ooh. Okay. Yeah, no, I mean, I don't know, man. Okay, so this is a big topic that we should declare our allegiance to. Are you a Picard or are you a Shatman guy? You for the Shatner or the Picard?
I guess I'm a Picard guy if I had to choose, but I like them both.
Yeah.
Of course, it's Kirk and Picard, not Shatner and Picard.
No, the Shatman, man. You gotta go. I've always been a loyal Shatner guy, but Picard, you know, starting to work its way on me.
Okay.
Starting to work its way.
Okay. Cool.
He's starting to work his way on me there. But yeah, the what Goldsmith does kind of primitive space music really well. Does that make sense to you when I say that? Phrase it that way, primitive. Like if there is a space tribal music sound,
he's got it. Yeah, definitely.
He does that, and I think it's sort of like Planet of the Apes.
Yes, I was going to say that if that pause was any longer.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's he does a little bit of that in this one. He actually does kind of the trombone theme that he stole from me, that I used in Groupers.
Oh.
So he probably saw Groupers.
Oh yeah. Everyone saw Groupers
last year and then went back in time and then put it into this movie.
He traveled forward in time to see Groupers, then went back, because you know, he is no longer with us. So.
Yeah, no, I was watching this and I was like, oh no, that's my theme. Did I rip off my theme? But it's slightly different.
You ripped off your theme, Rick.
No, it's weird when you hear music of movies that you've never seen before, but it sounds familiar to you. It creeps you out a little, right?
Yeah, it kind of does, yeah.
That happened to me in First Contact too, where I had heard that theme, but I had never seen the film. But he, it's a more modern spin. And you said this is your second favorite of the four?
Yeah. It's more memorable.
Yeah. Yeah. Movie too. Do you think Tom Hardy has something to do with that?
As far as the movie? Sure.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. He's a pretty good bad guy. And, so what else you got about this one? Anything?
Nope.
Okay, cool. So we're going to rank them now?
I already did. So First Contact, Nemesis, Generations, and Direction.
Yeah, I think that's probably my order, too. Look at that.
Look at that. We agree.
And movies, how would you rank them? Maybe the same.
Maybe the same, but maybe Generations and Nemesis switch. I'm not sure, though.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
So that would be First Contact, Generations, Nemesis, Insurrection, or the same as before. I just can't decide.
Hmm. Okay. Well, I think we're both in agreement on the scores. First Contact. Now, where does these, let's say the, is there a big gap? I think there's a big gap between Nemesis and Generations and Insurrection as far as the music. Right? So we kind of have First Contact and Nemesis in one category and then Insurrection and Genesis or Generations in another category.
I do First Contact in one, Nemesis in another, and then Insurrection, Generations in last.
Okay. So where does First Contact, your favorite of the previous movies was which one? Five?
Which one did I say? No, it wasn't five. Was it?
Earth, Wrath of Khan, maybe?
Maybe it was the motion picture. I think it was
the first one.
It might have been the motion picture. I forget what I picked. It might have been the motion picture. I'm not sure.
So in comparison to the previous six movies we talked about, where does First Contact compare for you?
Well, I already said it's the greatest Star Trek score.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I think it's two to the original for me. I would say the original, the Star Trek motion picture.
The only reason I say that it's better than the original motion picture is because it actually builds off the motion picture.
That's true. Yeah.
Even just a little bit, but it does.
But First Contact, definitely the winner of these.
Yes.
Boom.
Boom. Mic drop.
That's all we have for the new ones, right?
Yeah, we're good. We're good.
Well,
we're
not the new ones.
Just got to do an outro here. The next generation ones. Yes.
Yeah.
But yeah. Thank you all for listening. This is Ben and Rick. Hooked on Score, Confessions of a Film Music Addict. You can follow the show on Twitter and Instagram at Hooked on Score. You can follow me on Twitter at Benjamin_Moy and on Instagram at Benjamin.Moy. You can follow Rick at...
I believe I'm at Instagram Rick_Urban. And Twitter, I do not really use that much.
Okay, so no Twitter for Rick.
Hold on, I'm looking it up right now. I think it's at Rick Urban. I think it's at Rick Urban.
It's not at Rick Urban _ or anything like that?
No, I don't think there's any underscores involved because...
Okay, at Rick Urban, there you go.
Yeah. At Rick Urban. Boom,
you gotta figure that out one of these days. Because we go through this every episode.
Nobody uses Twitter anymore. Got to get on the TikTok or whatever it is.
All right. Thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.